I'm ready to go whenever you are.
Okay, Maddie's ready. I'm ready. Welcome back, everyone. We've got Maddie Williams again. Matt, we interviewed you a few months ago because you're the CrossFit guy who's doing a running thing.
Surely heaps of people are doing this.
Heaps of people.
Do you reckon I'm the only one in the world? No, I wouldn't be.
But people already know who you are because they already interviewed you.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're not the only one, surely.
I'm not the only one, but there would have been plenty of CrossFitters who... Actually, I saw heaps out there. Even people... I saw one person I actually knew on our particular run who I know does some CrossFit. So it definitely happens. So, yeah.
So Matt is a half owner, part owner of the CrossFit gym in Balmain, near to where Mike and I work. And he's a strength CrossFit person who did a marathon. So how long ago was it?
What's the date now? It's November... Like, start of November. It was
like 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was mid-September, so it must be about 6 weeks ago now.
So that's the Blackmores Marathon for anyone in Sydney.
Yep. And have you done it, Blackmores?
Yeah, not for a few years. I think I've done it two or three times.
Okay.
I've usually done it as a coach, so like running with other people, not really for myself.
That's what Mike said, the same thing. Yeah. He's like, oh, I'm doing this one as a coach. I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept. Like, so what happens with that? You kind of run like alongside someone, give them some coaching points, then go backwards or something?
Yeah, you kind of jump around the field a little bit. Oh, there's someone I'm coaching. I'll run with them for 3K and just kind of help them along.
Cool. I guess because you're a good runner anyway, but you're also pretty fresh, so you can just sort of keep up with them for a bit and give them some stuff. What kind of stuff do you give them?
Along the way?
Yeah, like how does the coaching look on the run?
It's kind of different for everyone. It's kind of getting in, just seeing where their head is at. And like I'll check their pace, be like, how are you running? You're going way too slow, or you're going way too fast.
Yeah, okay.
And I kind of check in with them physically like that. But then just where their head's at, some people get into holes pretty quickly, pretty easily.
Yeah.
And some people don't believe in themselves.
Yeah, well, I could see how that happens easily. Yeah.
Yeah. So especially if it's someone's like 10th marathon, they kind of know the drill. They know what they're in for. If it's someone's first marathon, I'll definitely spend more time with them, helping them out, seeing what they need. Just being next to them and talking to them, just talking about, I don't know, talking about that person's t-shirt over there, just something to take their mind off whatever's happening.
Yeah,
cool. That's useful in itself as well.
So worth having a coach in anything you do, eh? I mean, I'd never thought of that. For me, the connection of doing a marathon, having a coach, like, is I just never thought of it. Where it's no different to be like coming to one of my strength and conditioning classes and having the coach saying, oh, hey, on the next set of deadlifts, like, do this.
Yeah.
It's just a different environment. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Exactly. I never thought of that.
So how'd you go? How was the marathon? First marathon. You did it. You finished it, right?
Yeah, I finished it. And so my goal was, I had 6 months to train for it from the time I decided to actually do it.
Yep.
And so I saw Laura for some physio during that time. And she gave me some rehab things, which I was somewhat coherent to it. And then towards the end, I wasn't coherent at all.
Yeah.
And I did well. So I set she asked me to set an A, B, and C goal.
Yep.
And we kind of did that. We didn't formally do that. I just sort of did that towards the end. And so I set myself the B goal to finish under 4 hours.
Okay. Yep.
I finished with 3 hours.
Yeah.
59 minutes. And 14 seconds.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I managed to do it. All and right. Look, it was from, I assumed this would happen, but on the day I felt heaps better than what I expected.
Yeah.
Like you know, when I did my training runs, the furthest distance I had run was 23 kilometers.
Is that all?
In training.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I was freaking because I only ran that twice.
Yeah.
And each time after 23 Ks, I was hurting, man.
And like, so the marathon, that was a huge unknown for you then, the marathon.
Massive. So I had already prepared for the mental block on the run to go, well, once I get to 23 Ks, I'm actually in the completely unknown.
Mm, yep.
So I can't get to a point where I can give myself a reason to stop.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like I can't go, oh, 23 Ks, once I get there, like I know I'm usually stuffed, like I'm out.
Yeah. You literally don't know what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really framed it up as like, I just want to get to 23 Ks as best I can and give myself the opportunity to be able to get my goal.
Yeah.
So meaning like I'd gone back and figured out what pace I could run at a sustainable level, what that time frame was, and then I kind of really worked out how the marathon was going to go on paper. And I think it turned out to be if I could hold a 5:45 kilometer or a 5:30 kilometer from the start or something like that.
Yeah. You knew that was like your comfortable pace.
Yeah.
You can just sit there and cruise.
That was a pace that I was probably just above being completely sustainable.
Yeah.
But I knew I could hold it for 23 kilometers.
Yeah.
So I thought if I could do that, it's just going to give me the opportunity to go from there because the rest of it's unknown.
Yeah.
And so I got to 23 Ks and the whole thing was a party, man.
Yeah.
Dude, it was sick.
Dead set?
Yeah, just like all the drink stations are really cool. There's people dancing. The volunteers are really nice.
Bit of music, some high fives.
Music, high fives. There was a DJ pumping out the front of the SCG. She was going off. I almost stopped for a bit. So that was mad. And, you know, by the time I'd gone through Centennial Park and then back to the city, it was already 25 kilometers or something done. I was like, holy fuck, I'm almost halfway.
Goes pretty quick. Quicker than a long run by yourself, hey?
Oh, man. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool. And the pace runners were the 4 hour. I didn't know about the pace runners either. Yeah. So I saw the 4 hour guy or the 350 guy. So 350 was my A goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I saw them and I started a bit ahead of them. And I was like, if I can just stay ahead of them the whole time, it would be really handy.
Yeah.
So I managed to get about a kilometer ahead at one stage.
Yep.
Which is really good. And that was at about the 30K mark or just after that. And I thought, oh, sweet, I'll be going good here. But dude, 30Ks, like fucking hit a brick wall.
Yeah, piano on your back.
Oh my God. I remember getting to the 30K mark. It was a little hill going up and took a drink and they had some gels and stuff there, which I took some extras of. And I got to about 31Ks and it just slapped me in the face.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, last 10K is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I stayed in front of the pace runners the whole way.
Did you walk? And,
not once. The only time I walked, so this was another rule I had.
Yeah.
The only time I was allowed to walk was during a drink station. So I'd worked it out.
Yeah.
It was something like, I think I had to average 6 minute kilometers for the entire race.
Yeah.
So I ran at a 5:30 pace.
Yeah.
And I figured every 5Ks, I've now saved myself 2.5 minutes to walk through a drink station.
Yeah.
Just chill out a little bit and then carry on again. That was the only time I walked the whole time.
Cool.
And it worked really well. It was a good strategy for me.
That's something that I've thought about in the past. If you're doing an event that's taking you 4 hours and you walk for, say you walk for 20 seconds, what is 20 seconds over 4 hours? It's almost nothing in terms of your final result time. But if you take 20 seconds just to walk and chill, doesn't that like completely refresh you and just re-energize and rejuvenate you? Yeah. I think that's one of the best things you can do in a marathon is actually just walk for 20 seconds.
Yeah, it was actually something I learned unexpectedly when I was just doing my training runs.
Yeah.
Because in Sydney here, so I live, if anyone listening to this doesn't know Balmain, it's in basically the western edges of the city.
Mm.
So when I did my training runs going into the city, I'd always get stopped at traffic lights.
Yeah.
So there might be some of my training runs where I would run for, say, 10Ks.
Yeah.
And I'd be in good momentum, but I'd have to stop and wait for traffic lights. And I found, like, after just waiting for that traffic light for, 20 or 30 seconds, I'd start running and it felt like I had new legs.
Yeah.
So, it was a lot of it was to do with, I know I have the ability to recover quite quickly if I have the opportunity to rest.
Yeah.
So, I was like, of course, I need to use this thing in my run.
Yeah.
And so, I set that rule. And I'll tell you what, one of the things that really got me through was having that rule.
Yeah.
Because I never gave myself the excuse to walk between 5K markers. But once I got to that 5K point, I had earned the right to be able to relax a little bit. And I was like, thank fuck. And it was really good too for just breaking up the race for me as well.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like I could go...
Mini goals within the race. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So instead of having, I've got 32 kilometers to go, I'd be like, I've only got 5Ks to the next stop.
Yeah.
And I just kept doing that. And all of a sudden I realized I've only got two more stops to go.
Yeah.
So that was really cool for me as well, mindset-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that was how the race went. And the last couple of Ks, the pace markers caught up to me with about 1500 meters to go.
Yeah.
And that was like
the 4 hour guys.
Yeah, the 4 hour guys. Yeah. And that was Hurt Locker. Holy fuck.
You just tried to jump on and like hold on to someone else.
Grab onto their thing. And they're just like, fuckers, they were just having a chat. They're like having a party. They're handing out food and stuff. I was like, man, I'm dying here. Yeah. They're just chilling. Like, obviously, they're experienced runners and that kind of thing.
That's pretty funny.
So you
got there.
That was it. And congratulations. So I got my goal. I was pretty stoked. I got across the line, broke down in tears. My girlfriend gave me a hug. I couldn't hold it in. It was a really big emotional battle. So I'm just looking at my phone for the notes I wrote.
That's fine. I have cried at the finish line of several events.
Have you?
Yeah.
For what reason?
I cried at my first probably like 2 or 3 marathon finish lines. I couldn't give you a certain reason. I think it was just an outlet of emotion. Like this is something that you've worked towards for, you know, X amount of months and you try to do something and then you achieve it and there's just a big emotional release with that. Mm. Plus like physically you're just spent and you've got nothing else to do but lay down or cry.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's
physically I just don't know what else to do.
I'd never ever had anything in this like that feeling in my life before that point.
Yeah.
And it's actually the main reason I did the marathon is to do something that I've never done before and don't even know if I would have finished it.
Yeah.
You know, I felt as though I had definitely the mental capacity to be able to get through it no matter what. But perhaps my body just gets to a point where it literally shuts down and just cannot move.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And I remember for the Sydney course, the last couple of Ks is amazing.
Oh, isn't it?
You run under the bridge. along the rocks, foreshore.
You can see the Opera House ahead of you.
You can see the Opera House, and there's just... So I finished at about 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a Sunday morning. Sunday, yeah. So everyone's out for their Sunday walks and all that kind of stuff. So even if you didn't know the marathon was on, you could still stop and watch it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And they basically had the pathway from the rocks along the foreshore past Circular Quay and up to the Opera House as blocked off. It was probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 meters wide.
Yeah.
And just like people, man. Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
The last 1.5 Ks, I don't know, I couldn't put a number on it.
Yeah.
But both sides packed with people yelling, you're amazing. Yeah. Like I've never seen, I could never do this myself. Like just giving all this encouragement. Yeah. So once I got to that point, I couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
I was at the point of my absolute physical exhaustion of what I thought I could handle.
Yeah.
There was, I think it was the combination of that, the complete suffering and the immense joy all sort of meeting rivers in one point and just having this tidal wave of like emotions.
Yeah.
Of good, bad, ugly, and just I was like, I was running. I was like, I don't know what to do, and just I started crying. Like,
crying before you finished, you were crying.
Last kilometer,
really?
I was done. Yeah, I was just like, I can't believe these people are here, like supporting me, and because it just felt like that. Because I didn't realize as well, because the bib has your name on it. They're like, "Go, Matt." I'm like, "What?
Who are you?"
Thanks, man. Like, sweet. Like, what the hell? And then so that was really cool, and just the whole thing was just out of control, man. That last, it was worth it for that last kilometer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then you just have this, you cross the line, you have this like 30 seconds worth of like intense release of emotions. And then after that, you stand up, you're like, oh, that was good.
Yeah, totally, man. I remember walking through, I was lucky enough that my girlfriend could be standing right at the finish line because we had a friend who was running the event. And so she got her in. And
oh, epic. Yeah.
I was just down, man. And then I couldn't walk for a while. And then after that, I was just done and dusted. And
what's a while? Is that 5 minutes or 5 days?
Yeah, like 5 minutes. Oh, no. Yeah, I was actually really good the next day. Yeah. I think I had one or two rest days and I came to the gym and did some stretching and then maybe a really light work. Out on a bike or something like that, and back to training the week after.
Yeah, so, nice.
Yeah, it was good, man. I on the back end of it, I have my left knee now makes this creaky noise, which it never made before. It's not painful, but I was like, that's strange.
Yeah.
And I only get it when I'm climbing stairs.
Okay.
But whatever. But the strength training really helped.
And it's done that since you've run the marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I've never had it in my life, so it was interesting. I think if I was to have someone with my background, with having played sports and doing a pretty decent amount of strength training. So I have like about 8 years of consistent CrossFit behind me.
Yeah.
If I was to recommend, if someone asked me in that position, if they wanted to do a marathon again, I'd probably say 12 months.
12 months prep.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
6 months for me felt too rushed. I didn't feel like my progressions, the program I got had to sort of meet, I think we decided on 30 kilometers was a good distance to run before the marathon. And it was, they had pretty big jumps towards the end.
Yeah.
I missed a couple of sessions for whatever reason because I was just being a piece of shit with no discipline, or just time didn't allow me because all those types of things. So I found myself trying to make up a little bit of distance towards the end.
Yeah.
So I think if you had 12 months, it'd probably be a little bit safer.
Yeah. I think you need, and that's just touching on chronic workload.
Yeah.
Like when you just need this baseline of consistent chronic workload that you can then build from. Mm-hmm. Whereas you had zero chronic workload in terms of running.
Your chronic
workload in terms of strength and CrossFit is like amazing. 8 years of pretty consistent training. A lot of, like someone in my position, I've got 8 years of consistent running under my legs. So for me to train up for a marathon doesn't take me 12 months. It'll take me 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Or if I want to do it well, 6. But to go from no running to 42K in 6 months is hard. That's pushing your body from zero base.
Totally, yeah. It'd be the same as you coming here and like doing our program. You know, if you said to me, I want to do the CrossFit Open next year, like it's going to be 12 months from the last CrossFit Open workout today. So
is it?
You would have 12 months to train for that. I'd be like, oh, cool. That's probably pretty safe for Pat to like learn how to use his shoulders and get a bit of strength in your legs and that kind of thing. But 6 months would be like, I don't know. It would depend on the person.
Yeah. And if I had a lofty goal for a big overhead snatch, you know, in 3 months' time, you'd be like, whoa. Do you even know how your shoulders move yet?
Yeah. I guess the thing with running as well is because it's such a massive, like you really don't consider how much volume it is with every single step for every single run that you do, plus the walking and stuff you do during the day. Yeah. Like in comparison, like doing 5 sets of 5 back squats is nothing. It's not even close, man. Yeah. It's such a huge load.
Yeah, it's similar suffering, but the suffering is extended for, it's just drawn out for a long period of time.
Yeah, and you're talking about the 20 seconds across a whole marathon, it doesn't account to much, but then if you do that, if you looked at it like, you know, if you're 5% off with your, say, your running stride or something like that, for every single step, multiply the amount of steps you do, it amounts to something massive.
Oh, right? That's why we always talk like tiny, tiny changes in your technique can have such a profound effect.
Yeah.
If you're doing 50,000 steps in a few hours.
Like, yeah, no, I totally resonate with that now. Like, I'm glad that I had the history of CrossFit behind me, the strength training behind me, because I think that allowed me to get through it with somewhat of a time that I'm happy with and also not really being injured at all.
Yeah, and I was going to say that's why you didn't have, you know, significant knee pain for a week afterwards. Because you've got strong quads and hammies.
Yeah, I totally. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that. So I'm just looking at my notes. I wanted to go through a couple of things because I wrote down all this stuff after, because I knew I'd forget half of it.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I wanted to ask about was I did notice along the way, like heaps of people stopped with cramps.
Yeah.
Cramps was a big one, particularly. Yeah. I didn't really notice it before 30Ks. I think before that, I didn't really notice it at all, actually. Yeah. There was one girl who was actually passed out in the middle of the highway.
Yeah.
At 29.5 kilometers.
Yeah.
And she actually had paramedics around her.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw there was one guy far out, man. This was at the 32K mark, give or take, on the Piedmont foreshore. And there was a three paramedics there and some other people who had him on a stretcher bed to go into the back of an ambulance.
Really?
And he was covered in dirt. So he must have literally got to the point where he had passed out and fallen into the garden.
Oh my God.
And I was like, holy fuck. It was starting to get pretty hot by that point of the day as well.
Yeah.
And then from there to the finish line, I saw heaps of people like cramped, stretching on the side of the road, stopped, water on their face, all that kind of thing. So how does that come about? Because for me, I'm not an experienced runner, but I didn't feel that at all. I had a little sort of a burn in a knee.
Yeah.
At one stage coming down a hill, but it went away almost straight away.
So
how does that come about for someone who potentially experienced runners?
A cramp, we used to think of a cramp as dehydration and like you've sweated out all your salt, therefore you're deficient in salt, you're dehydrated, so you need to rehydrate and that'll fix your cramps. We now know that that's not true because people who are incredibly well hydrated still get cramps. A cramp is basically your central nervous system not knowing what's going on or being extremely fatigued. So we know that for a muscle to contract, it takes a signal from your nervous system to make it contract. And then for a muscle to relax, it takes another signal from your nervous system to tell your muscle to relax. So this all just happens normally as we just move out throughout our day. Like if I was to do a bicep...
It's not something you have to think about.
No, not at all. So if I was to do a bicep curl, all these nervous system signals happen to make my bicep contract, do a bicep curl, and then as I decide to relax my bicep, my brain is saying, cool, all those muscles that are currently contracted need to relax.
Yeah.
That's governed by neurotransmitters and all sorts of things that happen in your brain. And if you are fatigued or overworked or you've pushed your body or your central nervous system beyond what it's used to, those patterns start to misfire a little bit. So basically, you're getting the signal which says muscles switch on and contract, but you're not getting the signal which says muscles, you need to like stop contracting now. So it's a mismatch between those two. And that's got nothing to do with how hydrated you are. That's like literally neural fatigue. You're just exhausted. You're pushing your body beyond what you used to.
I've heard...
No one cramps 20K into a training run, but people cramp 20K into a race.
Because they've got that huge neural loading.
You're pushing yourself harder, like way harder than what you do in training. So your body's literally going, what the fuck's happening here? And the response is your nervous system is like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. Let's cramp up.
Yeah, okay. I've also heard a really good argument for a link to glycogen stores as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine from the similar sort of thing that you're talking about, like when you lose the ability to have a fast and effective fuel source for your muscles, and those muscles are going to start to not work as effectively as well. And I guess when you couple it with what you're talking about as well, it's a double whammy and then things start to shut down.
Exactly. And often you throw dehydration on top of that as well.
Makes it even worse.
Nervous system's not going to be happy if it's dehydrated. So like science hasn't settled on what a cramp is and how to fix a cramp. But
yeah,
we know that
isn't that funny, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always thought that's a strange thing because you think that'd be something they'd be able to get on top of pretty quickly.
Yeah, so the best thing we've got for it is pickle juice. Because pickle juice contains...
You mean like actual pickles?
Like legit
bullshit.
Pickle, no, 100%. Pickle juice contains... I don't know what it is. I'm not the expert here, but a pickle juice contains something. It's some kind of protein or some kind of acid that your body recognizes. And as soon as your body senses that that is in your mouth, it like is like a neural reset. Like it resets like your central nervous system and all those signals going through to your muscles are like reset. So it like gets rid of the cramp and then you're able to start again. So just putting pickle juice in your mouth and swirling around in your mouth. You don't even have to swallow it. You can swirl it around your mouth, spit it out. Yeah, it's disgusting. But if you're in the middle of an intense cramp, you put pickle juice in your mouth, the cramp goes away. Okay. So it's something that just kind of like reboots those neural connections to your muscles. It's really incredible. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to try that, eh?
Yeah.
Maybe I will.
See cool. I mean, it's, you know, 20 seconds of yucky taste in your mouth to get rid of cramp. We all know how painful cramps are.
Yeah, they're nasty. Yeah, I just thought that really interesting because I thought at the time, I was just thinking, well, like, I'm not an experienced runner. How am I getting through this as opposed to, like, these experience? Because, I mean, saw people with all the running gear. Not that all having all the running gear means that you're a good runner or anything like that, but they had all the running gear all and gear, that kind of stuff. Yeah, and they had, like, the long socks on and stuff. So I thought, you know, these are probably definitely more experienced runners than me. There has to be a reason why they're experiencing these things. And I really sort of took it down to, at the time, I was thinking it had to be a lot to do with maybe their race prep or their nutrition or their sleep. And I guess like what you just said as well.
That's, I think it's just how well your body's prepared for it, essentially. Yeah. If you've pushed your body beyond what it's used to doing, it'll backfire.
Yeah, okay.
So
makes sense.
You said you set a pace where you're like, I know I can comfortably sit at this pace and this pace is sustainable. And you knew that in advance and you sat at that pace and you had your walk break. So that was enough for your body to get through it.
Yeah, too. I actually wrote that down here as one of my notes as well. I thought that was a huge saver for me, eh? I had so I got heaps of other questions I wanted to ask. Well, not questions, I wanted to talk about. One was where was it? Come on. I just read it 2 seconds ago. Oh, the volunteers were sick, eh, by the way. Did I mention that? Yeah, I talked about the volunteers. Oh,
no,
here we
go. You didn't. But they are anyway.
They were out of control, man. Yeah. I was unexpected. I was expecting like crappy little drink stations that you could just pick up your own water and go. They were like, I saw this one dude. It was just only at like the, it must have been at, it was at the half marathon point.
Yeah.
And it was a group of four mates. They were English blokes and they were having a yarn and fucking around. A couple of them were dressed up as well. Oh, that's the other thing too. There were so many people dressed up. There was two Forrest Gump dress ups. I thought, fuck, I could have done that easy. Yeah. I already looked like Forrest Gump.
Yeah. You don't even need the beard. You've got it.
Yeah, I know. Totally. So that was pretty funny. Yeah. But there was this one guy. So there was that group of four and... they had handed out drinks to all of them, and one of the guys didn't get a drink. Yeah. So one of the volunteers, this guy must have been like 50 or 60, was pissing bolting up the road, and he ran up next to me. He must have been 2 or 3 meters past the drink station. Yeah. He's like, "Dude, you didn't get your drink. Like, here it is." Yeah. And he started. I was like, "This is out of control."
That's epic. That was just a drink station volunteer.
Just a drink station volunteer. Yeah. They were so good, man. The volunteers.
That's good.
But
and they're always like happy and cheerful. Hey. They always offer a high five. They're always encouraging.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Yeah. Like, I guess they just are also runners that are really into that kind of stuff. And or they have family out there they want to support. And they know they can't do the thing themselves. So they figure that's the way that they can do it. It's cool. One of the things I wanted to talk about was... this was one of the things that I learned. And it was... I saw from the start that... I don't know if everyone runs their own race. So, like, at the start... in the first kilometer, there's people like going so quick, man. I was like, this is fucked. There's no way I'm going to be able to sustain this pace. Yeah. And I even had one girl go past me in the middle of the Harbour Bridge. So if you haven't done this run before, it's like only kilometer and a half.
It's like the second kilometer.
And she was running with a group. She looked like she had a bit of experience running. She said, oh, yeah, look, if it looks like I'm not going to make 4 hours, and I'll pick up the pace a bit. And she was like running super fast past me. I was like, holy fuck, like, how can these people do this? And she's already thinking, she's talking about, so for me, I heard 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I saw her running at that pace. I was like, have I got something wrong here? Like, I'm sure.
Throws that doubt into your mind,
totally.
Doesn't it?
And then I started thinking, maybe I should be running a bit faster here.
What a head game.
Oh, mate. But anyway, so I went back to my numbers and I just kept cruising along and that kind of stuff. And my Garmin blew out in the first kilometer was completely off by about 500 meters. I was like, oh, fuck, what am I going to do here? But anyway, so something I learned was because I had that huge space of the unknown after 23 kilometers, and I figured this out on the day. I had to set a scale of intensity.
Yeah.
And the way I picked this up, actually, if anyone listens to this, if you're doing any sort of intense training like a CrossFit program, is some workouts suck, man. Like, I mean, what's a really hard running workout you would do? Like maybe a stair run or something like that? Or
Hill repeats,
like, mad example. Like that's nasty, that shit. Yeah. And you can like, that can feel like a 10 out of 10 where you're on the floor rolling around just going, that sucked.
Yeah.
So, but then also going for a leisurely jog and a recovery run feels like a two.
Two, yeah. You know,
you can look around at the scenery and talk to your mate and all that kind of stuff.
You're not out of breath. You're just cruising.
Yeah. So, I do the same thing with CrossFit here. Yeah. Like, we say to the guys today, you should feel like a 6 out of 10. Like, just take it easy. Whereas other days, like, this is a 10 out of 10. They're two easy movements like the bike and burpees. Like, I want to see you suffer, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, man, I need to apply this for the rest of my run. Yeah. So, what I did, I ended up using a scale of intensity based on the distance I covered.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that in the past, having run 23 kilometers, like for me, that felt like a 10 out of 10 by the time I got to that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew that I couldn't beat that point during the race.
You can't maintain 10 out of 10.
Totally. So I couldn't get myself to a point where the comfort felt like I was already at my max because I couldn't sustain that for another 20 kilometers. So as I was going through, I was like, well, at the moment, I kind of feel like I won. Like I'm good, eh?
Mm.
And then I started up in the ante and I tried to save my 8 out of 10, like to the last kilometer, if I could.
Yeah.
It probably got to about a 9 out of 10, I'd say, in the last 3 kilometers.
Yeah.
So it just meant I had to really sort of hold on to my mental capacity to be able to get through it. But that was something that saved me heaps, man. Because like being able to set a scale of like just sort of I envisioned like a notch of 1 to 10, like a dial.
Yeah.
And I would just turn it up one notch when I really felt like a change in the maybe the pattern or the running rhythm I was in and that kind of stuff. I heard some really good advice from a girl named Sam Gash who does super ultra marathons. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that it kind of, I don't know if you get this or not, but you when you're running, it kind of goes in waves.
Oh,
do you ever feel that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She'll definitely be like,
for whatever reason, you'll be running along and the world sucks. Like everything is just fucked.
Yeah.
No matter what the distance.
Yeah.
And you think, how am I going to get through this? Yep. All these questions come up, like you should stop, you're going to hurt yourself, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, 2Ks later, you're like, this ain't so bad.
Yeah, I'm cruising. Not actually out of breath. Yeah.
And then you look down and you watch, you're like, I just ran my fastest kilometer.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And so once I attached to that, I was like, oh, I can really sort of start playing around with this dial of intensity. Yep. Dude, it saved me so much.
And that's how I, that's very much me. When I run, I'm a bit of a running gypsy. I don't run to numbers. Like, I'm not going to run to this exact pace or this exact heart rate or this exact power output or whatever. Like,
whatever,
I guess in my speak, we call that rate of perceived exertion, RPE. Like an RPE 5 out of 10. You can maintain that all day. Mm. You can maintain an RPE of 9, like, for a minute.
Yep.
And then you're cactus.
Yep.
And it's just, it's perceived exertion, RPE. It's literally how you feel.
Yep.
And you've got to, when you're doing something for 4 hours, you've got to feel pretty comfy most of the way, knowing that in the last half an hour, it's going to get hard. In the last 20 minutes, it's going to get real hard. And if you're not running to feel, forget what your watch says. It's probably the best way to run. And a lot of pros do that. Pros don't actually wear watches.
Yeah, it was crazy, actually. I would definitely do that. If I was to run a marathon again, I wouldn't even wear a watch.
Yeah.
I didn't do music either, by the way.
And then that you've got to layer in experience as well, because the first half of a marathon is easy, like it should be. You're just cruising along. So you want to feel, you know that you want to feel good until at least 30K. That's what you want, at least in a marathon. So if you're basing it off RPE, you've got to have that experience of knowing that the race starts at 30Ks.
Yeah, totally. Well, I actually got to the 30K point, and there was someone right next to me. He's like, we're halfway. And then they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, man, this is definitely halfway, trust me. Yeah, the RPE thing is really interesting. The watch was super beneficial to be able to just, because I had no experience, so it was really good just to see, because I really wanted to try and get my goal.
Mm.
Having the goal too, by the way, this is a side note, really allowed me to explore the limits of my capacity, I think. Because without the goal, when I got to that 35k mark, I was like, oh man, I'm really hurting here. If the goal was just to finish the marathon, then I could have done that. I could have walked the rest of the way and I would have finished it in under 5 hours or something like that. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. And you would have still gotten it and you would have been like, hey, I just did a marathon.
Like, great. But
you would have been happy.
To have that, like, I really did want to be able to do this thing and reach my potential perceived maximum. And now that I have that, now I have a benchmark to work off if I did ever want to do it again.
Yeah, definitely.
Side note, never doing it again. But, who knows?
I'm pretty sure like 90% of people who do that say that.
Yeah, I bet. Actually, I spoke to Laura the other day too. She did the October one in Melbourne. She said, I'm not doing one ever again.
Yeah. That's the second time she said that. She's done 2 marathons.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go. So it's, having that goal was really handy. I've lost what we were talking about.
I want to ask you something. I want to ask you something.
Yeah, ask me. It's your podcast, so you ask me questions.
I prefer not to do the work.
Yeah.
How did your body change? Did your body change?
During, after, now?
In the 6 month build up.
Oh yeah.
Tell me about it.
Oh my God.
Tell me about it.
The first, I wasn't doing, so before February when I started training for this and I came and saw you guys for the first time, before that I wasn't doing a lot of strength and conditioning in my background, like a lot of surfing, maybe training once a week at the most.
Yeah.
So there really wasn't anything going on, which was one of the reasons why I decided to do the marathon in the first place. I needed a
kick
new
up the butt.
Spark. Yeah. So, but even from that point of a place where I really hadn't been training a lot and I wasn't at my, usually if I'm training a lot, I'm about 84 kilos.
Yeah.
I think at that point I was 81. So I was probably 3 kilos of muscle mass lighter than I normally am.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm pretty lean. I don't ever, I'm never over like 12% body fat or 11% body fat. So from that point, I got down to weight-wise, I think I got down to about 78 or 79. So I didn't lose a lot of weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
But man, by the time I got to July, people were starting to say to me, like, you're looking really thin, eh?
Yeah.
And because I hadn't really noticed it because you see yourself every day.
Yeah.
So I still kind of looked the same.
Yeah.
And the scales hadn't changed that much. Not that I weigh myself often.
But other people noticing.
But people really noticed it, like, man, especially my legs.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, man, your legs are getting like pretty thin there, right? You need to start squatting again. I was like, holy fuck, okay.
Yeah.
And
what about your shoulders, upper body?
Yeah, probably the same. I'd say pretty proportionate, but I was still surfing 3 or 4 times a week.
Okay, so a bit of shoulder action and
Yeah, so I still had a lot of upper body work. I noticed visually, I looked a lot leaner.
Yeah.
Like you could see a lot of definition, even though I wasn't doing a lot of training because I was always kind of there, that muscle mass.
Yeah.
So that changed a lot. But yeah, they were the big changes. People like actually physically noticing it.
Yeah.
And just going, dude, you look really thin.
Like, looking skinny. Okay. Yeah.
Not to the point where they're like, you should eat a steak.
Yeah.
Because my diet was really good during the day. I ate heaps of food still.
My I know a fairly good runner. I won't name drop, but he was actively trying to lose a couple of kilos to get better at running. And it got to the point where one of his work colleagues said, dude, are you okay? Like, you look sick. Like, you look malnourished. And internally, he was like, fuck yeah, I've done it.
Oh, my God.
And yeah. I'm like, that's a bit weird.
That's hectic. Yeah, it's funny too, because I've never been in that space before where I've been losing weight while training.
Yeah.
I've always done the strength and conditioning, so I've always put on weight while training.
Yeah.
And so that was really, how are you going for time, by the way? You need to get out of here at 12.
We've got about 8 minutes.
So, yeah, it was really interesting. To go through that because, like I said, because I saw myself every day without that feedback from other people, I'd be like, oh, everything's fine, like everything's going well. So I could see how people would get into a state where they've gotten really thin.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was the same, a good friend of mine who's really into his CrossFit, and he went down the marathon path and same deal. He got so thin. He got really fast at running.
Yeah. How often were you doing any kind of leg strength whilst you were training for the marathon?
Not much.
What's not much?
The rehab stuff I got from you guys was to do a lot of balance work, like single leg deadlifts.
Single leg stuff, yeah.
Single leg stuff. And that wasn't really huge strength work for me.
Were you doing any squats or deads?
Yeah, no, I wasn't really training at all. I got to the point, there was one training session I had, and I think I did some deadlifts on the Monday.
Yeah.
And then I ran on the Tuesday and I was fucked. My hamstrings were fucked. Yeah. Like I couldn't. It wasn't really an intense deadlift session or anything like that. Like maybe I did a 5 sets of 4 at like 80% of my 1 rep max.
Yeah.
And that was fine at the time doing that.
Mm.
But I didn't really know the flow and effect that would have on the next day.
On the running, yeah.
And then when I ran that day, I remember finishing that run. That was one of the ones where I was aiming for about 24Ks and I only made it to like 18.
Yeah.
And my hamstrings just completely blew up. I was like, I can't do that anymore.
So heavy, that's partly programmed. It's a heavy strength session the day before a long run.
Yeah, it just kind of
doesn't make sense, but
it wasn't. Yeah, it's just inexperience, right?
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, the deadlift is fine. Like I can definitely do that thing. That's easy, and at the time it felt easy.
Yeah.
But I wasn't considering the whole volume.
Yeah.
And it was very clear that the next day my whole posterior chain blew up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's probably some other factors there as well, like maybe diet for that day or sleep or whatever. Mm. But then it was kind of detrimental too, because then already from that point my mind subset was like, we can't deadlift anymore.
Mm.
So I just completely took it out of my program. So
by the time... And that's what happens to all runners. They're like, I squatted and then my legs were sore and I couldn't run very well the next day. Therefore, squats are bad. I'm not doing any more ever.
Pretty much. Like, yeah.
That's probably not the correct response. I mean, for someone like yourself, it's fine because you've got this strength background and you don't necessarily need to do more strength because it's there for you.
That's right.
But if someone's never done squats, of course, it'll give them DOMS the next day and they won't run very well. But if you can build that up over a couple of months... then squats don't give you that DOMS the next day and you can run.
Yeah, one of the things that we really talk to, this is our clients at the gym, we talk to them about when they come in for a CrossFit program, is everyone wants a quick fix.
Yeah.
No matter what it is. Like you tell me about, you know, your friend that's got migraines at the moment. If you could fix that with a pill like that, he would take that.
Oh, 100%.
Like 100% would take it. Whereas if it's my girlfriend's pregnant at the moment, if you could take the baby out and she could have the baby, she'd be like, quick, sweet, done. Like, but it's like a 9-month process. There's nothing you can do about that. Yeah. And it's the same with your strength training or your running, whatever it is. Like if you want the quick fix, you can probably do it. If it's lose the 10 kilos, squat the 100 kilos, run the 4-hour marathon, whatever. Mm. You can probably achieve it in that short period of time. But it significantly increases the chance of risk, of injury.
Yeah, big time.
Like massively. So one of the huge mindset shifts that we have to make with people that come to our gym, particularly if they've come from somewhere that does a lot of 8-week challenges and that type of thing, is we like, look, you're 35 years old, you're actually injury free, which is fucking surprising. Because there's almost, I don't know, any 35 year olds that haven't had an injury at some point in their life. From this point, man, we've really got like 50 good years of life in you.
Yeah.
If you've got 50 years to get healthier, which is the goal, then how about you take that 10 pounds off the bar and just go a little bit easier today?
Yeah.
You know, like, so if you start changing your time frame around things, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So going back to what I was saying at the start, if I was to recommend anyone that wants to go, that was in my position with zero running background, some strength training and really wanted to do a marathon, I'd be like, cool. Let's spend the next 6 months injury-free and continue doing your CrossFit.
Yeah.
Let's then spend 6 months just dipping your toe in the water with some running.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 5 to 10 Ks a week. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
And the next 6 months after that, we'll find a really good training program for you.
Yeah.
Whether that includes maybe some strength training, or I'd most likely go to someone like yourself who's a running specialist and say, hey, look, you should probably really continue doing some strength work once or twice a week for another 6 months. And we'll just slowly increase your running, maybe, you know, a kilometre or two each week.
Yeah, something small. And that's just building that chronic workload.
Yes.
And having some consistency, which we've talked about recently.
So. Totally. And then that last 6 months will be maybe more specific running, and you're only doing maybe one strength session a week. Perfect. And it might even be upper body work, not even lower body work, and some rehab. And then if you look at it like that, that's 2 years from, instead of 6 months, for the same journey.
That's how you get a good result, and that's sustainable, and that you'll probably have a positive experience.
Totally, yeah. I've been saying I want to go back to doing a run. I haven't been back for another run yet.
Yeah.
After the marathon.
You haven't.
I've been wanting to. I've been looking at the shoes. They're in the cupboard.
Yeah.
But this left knee, the niggle in the knees a bit annoying. Actually, I twisted my knee surfing on the weekend, so I can't really do any high impact stuff. So I'm going to have to wait a little bit. But yeah, man, like anyone that, whether you're a runner trying to get better at running, like I'd shift your mindset around your time frame on doing the thing you want to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's an ultra marathon or a trail run or whatever it is.
And there's so many training programs out there that are like, you know, for a beginner runner, marathon in 16 weeks program. It's like, if you're one of the lucky ones and your body can keep up with your cardiovascular system, you might be able to do it. It'll be hard. But most people don't get through those 16-week marathon training programs injury-free.
It's either too intense, you feel like you're running the entire time, like I said,
you break down in week 7 because it's too much.
Then it becomes a gamble. You're literally like playing playing roulette, you know, like.
And then they come and see me at the physio and I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, trying to run. And I'm like, well, fuck.
Yeah, that's right. And then you associate, you know, running with injury, which I'm doing at the moment with my knee. I'm like, this left knee, I've never had this before. Yeah. Like, it's probably subconsciously keeping me away from running a little bit, which is not I'll get over it soon enough.
Mm.
Okay, you've got 3 minutes. But I think like reframing the time that you have available to do the thing. Because I really, really wanted to do this marathon, but I didn't have to do it this year. I could have waited till the one next year and I actually would have had close to 2 years to be able to train for it.
Yeah.
And I would have felt a lot better about it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that you've done this, you can do something like you know what your body's like with this sort of work. You can do like a half marathon, which won't require as intense training, but you'll have a good experience doing it. Maybe. I don't know. You can reframe some goals, do other things.
Cool.
Depends what you're into.
Last message I have before going away, because you've got 2 minutes.
What?
A friend of mine said you should, if you ever find yourself in a tough situation, is to tell yourself to embrace and be grateful for the opportunity for the discomfort and suffering that you're currently going through.
Oh, I like that. Say that one more time.
Well, I'll probably stuff it up.
You'll say it differently.
To be thankful and grateful for the opportunity to be suffering for what you've currently got.
Yeah.
Because currently what you've asked to be there and you've asked for everything. You know, I wrote down at the start of my first few notes that I wrote down were those signs we were laughing about at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like people holding up signs like Chuck Norris hasn't run a marathon. I was like, fuck yeah, that's mad. What a pussy. beer is near. You paid for this.
Yeah.
I've always wanted you said before. Chafage is coming.
Warning, chafing ahead.
Yeah. So man, you asked for it. So don't complain. Like just pick your shit up, get all your shit together, put it in one sock and carry on.
Yeah. Aren't you stoked to be here right now and doing this thing?
Yeah, man. Like, just in, I got everything that I asked for.
Yeah, yep.
I got suffering. I got joy. I got my goal. Like, the goal, who cares? If I didn't get the goal, it wouldn't have mattered. I got to finish the race. Like, everything I asked for, I got.
You got those emotions. You got the medal. Like, you got it all.
The medal went straight in the bin. I shouldn't have taken it.
Did it?
Yeah, I didn't want to keep it. Yeah. But it's if you sign up for something like this, I encourage you to go and sign up for something you've never done before.
Yeah.
And see how that goes. And you might even think you can finish it. Like, go and do that. Like, go and find that thing that you've... It makes your palms sweaty.
Yeah.
And it scares the fuck out of you. And just go and give it a crack. And just embrace the suffering. And fuck, good luck.
Big time. That's it. You do that with anything in your life.
Yeah.
Marathon's a hell of a good way to do
it. It's a good way to do it, man.
Dude.
Cool.
Thanks for the chat. Congrats on the run.
Thanks, bro.
It's epic.
What's your next run, by the way?
My next one? I don't have anything for a few months. Got a marathon in April.
Yeah, I want to get you on our podcast.
So I got a good 5 month lead into that.
But yeah, I want to get you on our podcast to talk about the one you've just done. You've just done
UTMB.
I want to hear about that because that's next level, man.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll get on to Maddie. Maddie's got his own podcast with his CrossFit community here. It's called Accelerate Strength.
Yeah, Accelerate Strength podcast. You can check it out. It's on social media and all that. So
for sure.
Yeah, man. Cool. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, brother. Cheers.
Bye.